Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater, program 299. In the series, Lisa, which means next Saturday, 300.
So what are you going to do about it, Carl?
Well, hopefully I won't have laryngitis next week.
That would be a gift right there.
So I apologize to all of our listeners. I have laryngitis, so that's it. I'm done. So just take over right now.
Yeah, no problem. I'm on it.
See you later.
Maybe you could talk a little less and we'll have a good show.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we have Mr. and Mrs. North to start things off. Then it's The Whistler. Yeah, you're going to like that. A good detective adventure and then a good mystery. And we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. But before we do that, Lisa, yesterday we decided on your theme song.
You decided my theme song, just
well,
so we're clear.
I picked two songs.
Right.
And then you agreed on one of them. So here's Lisa's theme whenever we want to introduce Lisa. All right, so there you go.
You know, I'm okay with it only because that is a really good song.
That is a good song.
It's not referring to me personally, but
yes,
it's a really good song.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Oh, it is referring to me. I'm the evil woman.
Yeah.
All right, well, I couldn't let you do a song about me without actually doing a song about you. This is what I think of whenever I think of you. So
okay.
Here is Carl Amari's theme song.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. So sexy it hurts, and I am too sexy for Milan. So sexy for Milan.
This is the epitome of spot on. This is too spot on.
I know. I decided to take this very seriously, and I wanted the epitome of Carl Amari. And immediately, and I kid you not, immediately this song came to my mind.
Really?
Yeah.
See, yours is not so spot on because you're not always evil.
Oh, just part of the time?
With me, you're evil.
Oh,
you're
all
evil
right.
to me
well,
all the time.
You know, it's your choice what you pick.
That's too spot on.
Yeah.
The sexy for your shirt.
I took this job very
all right,
seriously.
So those are our theme songs. Very good. I like it, Lisa.
Thanks,
I like
Carl.
It. All right, that's what we'll, you know, every once in a while, when we're going to do something, we'll play our theme songs.
Great.
But right now, it's time for Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. What's the movie?
The movie is The Sixth Sense.
Oh,
1999.
Good one.
I know.
What do they win?
They're going to win a Never Measure.
Ah, that's
yes,
great.
Yes, they are back ordered, but they are coming back in stock, and you can win one if you are the sixth caller, because it is...
Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense.
All right, what's the number?
312-981-7200. Call
right.
in, play Crack the Quote with
you
us.
You got it. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Glenn on the phone. Hi, Glenn.
Well, hi, Carl. Hi, Lisa.
How you
hi,
doing?
Glenn.
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Good to hear from you. We're going to play a little Crack the Quote, and the movie is The Sixth Sense. You ready to do it?
I'm ready.
All right. I don't see Roger in my screen, so I don't know if he's there.
He's
so
there.
He's there.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. I don't see you. All right.
I'm here.
Okay. Roger's there. He's going to play with us. Quote number one, I feel nothing or I feel everything. Quote number two, sometimes you feel it inside like you're falling down real fast. Number three, sometimes I feel like ripping apart my skin. What do you think, Glenn?
I think number one.
You like number one. I feel nothing or I feel everything. Carl, what do you think?
Number two.
You like two? Sometimes you feel it inside like you're falling down real fast?
Yeah.
All right, Roger, what do you think?
Boy, I hate to say this, but I'm thinking of agreeing with Carl.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
okay. All right. Well, Ashley knows.
Life is over then, I guess.
No. Uh-oh.
Like
all right.
Mine.
Ashley will help us out. Let's hear it.
Sometimes you feel it inside, like you're falling down real fast.
Ding, 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 ding.
It is number two. So Roger and Carl actually got it right, which is, you know, a change from the past. But the good news here, Glenn, is you are a winner.
You know what? I've learned that even a blind dog finds a bone once in a while.
There you go. Are you the blind dog or is Roger?
Woof.
I won't even ask that. Anyway, Glenn, you are a winner. We are so happy to send you a Never Measure. It is a wonderful prize. People are lining up and clamoring for the Never Measure. You can easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations fast. No need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. It is veteran-owned, made in the USA, and you can check it out at nevermeasure.com. Go to the website. They have a great video that shows the product and how easy it is to use and what a wonderful tool it is. So check it out.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, thank you for playing, Glenn.
All right, are you ready for Mr. and Mrs. North, Lisa?
Good detective adventure.
Well, before we do that, I want to remind all of our listeners that we have a text in line, and we absolutely love getting your texts. 312-981-7200. You know what? If you have not ever texted us, okay, if you're out there right now and you've never texted us, we want you to text in.
Only if you've never, because if you can't do it.
No, no, of course. Oh,
okay.
Of course. Everybody
clear.
Can text in. But you know what? Take this opportunity, folks. We want to get your texts. We want to hear from our listeners. Tell us what you think of the show. Tell us your suggestions. You know, whatever's on your mind, we want to hear about it. Right, Lisa?
Yeah, as long as you're nice and kind and respectful, we're happy to hear from you.
Of course. And maybe what do you think of our theme songs?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm all about that.
All right, 312-981-7200. But right now it's time for a detective adventure of Mr. and Mrs. North. Now, this was a fictional married couple appearing in novels, motion pictures, radio, and TV. It was created by Francis and Richard Lockridge. And the Norths were not actually like professional detectives. They were just a well-to-do New York couple who stumbled across a murder or two every week and felt compelled to solve the crime. And this was a popular show. It had 20 million weekly listeners, Lisa.
Kind of same as our show.
Yeah.
Same.
About the same.
Yeah.
Joseph Curtin and Alice Frost originated the roles. Later, Richard Denning, who played Lucille Ball's husband on Mr. and Mrs. North, was Mr. North on this. I meant to say Lucille Ball on My Favorite Husband. That's what I meant to say. And then Barbara Britton. And, you know, this radio and TV show actually inspired Heart to Heart with Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers.
I remember that show.
That was a great show. All right, let's listen to a great radio episode now of Mr. and Mrs. North. September 8th, 1953. It's called Die Hard. Here's part one of Mr. and Mrs. North.
Bertie! Bertie, it's Pam!
Darling, she isn't here.
Jerry, she is. I know she is, and we have to get in there. Something's happened to her.
Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Richard Denning and Barbara Britton. Listen as Pam and Jerry solve the mystery, Die Hard. September is a time of many things, of turning leaves and returning vacationists, of homes suddenly grown quiet, and schoolyards and campuses come back to life. And September is a nostalgic time, a time just made for a person like Pam North to revisit a place like Colfax College.
Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
Listen. The chapel bells. Oh, Colfax, we love thee. Thy towering trees, thy hallowed halls, thy fields of golden flax.
Flax?
Golden flax, Colfax, it rhymes.
It does.
Oh, Colfax, oh, Colfax, we love our home.
Oh, Pam. Darling, what's the matter?
That song, I never hear it but what I cry.
Well, I don't wonder. That song's enough to unnerve anyone.
Jerry.
The music I can stand, but those lyrics.
It's not what the lyrics say, it's what they mean.
Okay, darling. Now, what do we do?
Well, let's see. We've seen the stadium, the dorms, March Hall, Edwards Hall. Now to the library.
The library? Oh, now, Pam, you're not going to have time to read.
Oh, I'm not going to the library to get a book. I'm going to see Bertie.
Bertie?
Bertie Twig.
Who?
T-W-I-double-G, Twig.
Oh, you're kidding. There really isn't anybody named Bertie Twig, is there?
Oh, yes, there is.
Well, then let's go. This is a person I want to meet.
No, Nancy. No, dear. I'm sorry.
But cheapers, Miss Twig.
Very sorry, but a rule is a rule. After all, that's why rules are made.
Yes, but...
Adult books are for adults. Children's books are for children. That's the rule, dear.
But I'm not a child. I'm 13.
13. Yes, yes, I know, but... Well, a book like this. Oh, my. Why, I haven't read this even at my age. You run along, dear, and... Oh, Mrs. Turner, good afternoon.
Oh, hello.
Are you, looking for someone, Mrs. Turner?
What? No.
Well, if there's anything I can help you with...
Thanks.
The new fiction is over by the...
I know.
She sure hangs around here a lot all of a sudden, don't she?
What?
Mrs. Turner, she comes in here almost every day.
Why, yes. Yes, she does.
She sure must take out a lot of books.
As a matter of fact, she never... No. No, it can't be.
What's the matter, Miss Twig?
But it is.
It is Pamela.
Hello, Bertie.
I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. Pamela Saunders.
Oh, not Saunders anymore, Bertie. North.
North? North?
Yes, yes, of course.
North. And this is your husband.
Jerry, this is Bertie Twig.
Oh, how do you do, Miss Twig?
What a wonderful, wonderful surprise.
Guess I better go now, Miss Twig.
Put that book back, dear.
Okay.
Now, you two come right into my office where we can have a nice long chat. I want to hear all about... Wait. Here's someone you must meet. Oh, a professor.
What? Yes, Miss Twig.
Professor, I want you to meet Mr. and Mrs. North. Pamela, Jerry, this is Professor Markham.
Nice meeting you, Professor.
Pamela is a graduate of Colfax, Professor.
How nice.
Of course, that was before your time.
Oh, my goodness, Bertie, you make me sound ancient.
No, dear. I didn't mean that. My goodness, no. It's just that Professor Markham is one of our newest, and I might add, most brilliant young professors. Are you, looking for someone, Professor?
No. Well, I'm happy to have met you, Mr. and Mrs. North. I'll go back to the stacks and browse around, Miss Twain.
The new fiction is over by the...
Bertie.
Oh, Pamela, I...
Is there anything wrong, Miss Twig?
Wrong? No. At least I don't think there is.
You're a little late, aren't you, Paul?
You said 3 o'clock.
I'm talking about last night. Why didn't you meet me?
We can't talk here.
Where were you, Paul?
We can't talk here, Mildred.
Then let's go somewhere where we can.
Well, I have to be back on the campus in a few minutes.
Quit stalling.
Keep your voice down.
I'm not going to go on like this.
Now, Mildred, please.
I'm going to tell Cliff about us.
No. Mildred, listen. Something's come up that makes it absolutely imperative that no one find out about us temporarily.
What's the excuse this time?
I had dinner last night. Peter Carlisle. He's chairman of the board of trustees for the college.
Well,
that's why I couldn't meet you.
Go on.
Well, Carlisle told me, in the strictest confidence, that the presidency of the college may be vacant within a month or two, and that there's a very good chance that I may get the appointment.
You?
But I'd never be considered if you asked Cliff for a divorce now. The publicity would...
Hello, Mrs. Turner. Hello, Professor Martin.
This is too risky. Can you meet me tonight?
Yes.
8 o'clock?
Pilot Rock?
Yes. I'll go out first.
All right.
And you remember Tommy Lawson, Pamela? Well, he... Oh, excuse me.
I'd like to take out this book, Miss Twing.
All right, Professor. The Psychology of Murder.
What?
The title of the book. The Psychology of Murder.
Oh, so it is.
Well, you picked up the wrong book and want to change it.
No. That's all right. I'll take it. It might be very interesting.
Hello, Gertie, Jerry?
Yeah, she's a bit fluttery, but nice. Ugh.
What's the matter?
This food.
It isn't very good, is it?
Oh, there must be a better restaurant in town than this.
Well, there is. Several.
Well, why did you want to come here?
Well, I just wanted to see the place again. Mm. When I was in school, this used to be called the Icebox. It was just a soda parlor then. It didn't have a cook.
It still doesn't. Look,
ma'am, let's... Will there be anything else?
No, thank you. Just the check.
Yes, sir.
Come on, finish your coffee, Clam, and let's go.
Anybody out front, Mildred?
Kaplan, number two. We're just leaving.
We're slow tonight.
Yeah. I'm going home, Cliff.
Going home? What are you talking about? It's only 7:30.
We won't be busy tonight. You can handle the front. Please, Cliff, I've got a nasty headache.
You're lying. You don't have a headache any more than I do. You're not going home.
What's the matter with you?
I'm sick of this. That's what's the matter.
Sick of what?
Who are you meeting?
What?
You heard me.
No, for crying out loud.
Stop lying.
Stop yelling. Those people out front can hear.
Let them. Answer.
Let go.
Who have you been meeting? Who is he?
No one. Now let go of me. Let go.
Hey, you come back here. Mildred.
I'm leaving. I'm through.
I'll find you. I'll find you, you hear? And when I do, I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
Golly, Jerry.
Come on, darling. Let's just leave some money and get out of here.
When I went out the door, Cliff was yelling, I'll kill you, I'll kill you.
Oh, sounds like a delightful little scene.
It was horrible, but... Well, I'm glad it happened.
Oh?
Cliff had to find out sometime.
You said you denied meeting anyone.
I did, but Cliff knows I'm lying. Paul, we've got to tell him the truth.
And get ourselves killed?
Oh, Cliff didn't mean that.
Well, how can you be sure?
I know, Cliff.
Well, perhaps. But I'd hate to go to him and then have you discover that you don't know him as well as you think you do. But aside from that, you seem to have forgotten what I told you this afternoon in the library.
About the presidency of the college? I haven't forgotten. In fact, I've given it a lot of thought.
Good.
You haven't heard what I've been thinking.
Then maybe you better tell me right now.
A little while this afternoon, you had me fooled.
Fooled?
But not for long. After I left the library, I went over to the college and walked around the campus for a little while, daydreaming. Thinking about what it was going to be like when I was Mrs. Paul Markham, wife of the president of Colfax College. Me, Mildred Turner, graduating from slinging hash in a greasy spoon to serving tea at a faculty reception. I thought now for a dame that didn't even finish high school, I'm going a long way. And then it hit me. Wham! Right between the eyes.
What?
But people don't travel that far that fast. Not people like me. And you know it.
Well,
and you knew it this afternoon in the library. It was just another stall. Another excuse. Like all the other stalls and excuses.
Mildred.
But this was the last one.
What are you going to do?
Divorce Cliff and marry you. Okay, so I won't be the wife of a college president. So I'll settle for being just a Mrs. Professor.
I'm not going to marry you, Mildred. I don't love you,
and I... isn't what you said the other times we met here at Pilot Rock.
Well, nevertheless, I'm not going to marry you. This whole thing has been a mistake.
Maybe so. But there are some mistakes you can't correct, Paul. And this is one of them.
I don't think so.
Paul.
I can correct it.
Paul! Paul, don't. No, please. Please, Paul, don't. I can't breathe.
That's it. Sorry, I came in there a little early because there was...
You got overexcited. You just
there was
had
no,
to start talking
There was
right
nothing
away.
Going on. It was like dead air. It was weird.
No, it was a dramatic moment.
I mean, why was this guy, if he wanted to get out of marrying the girl, there's easier ways to do that than to strangle her to death.
Yeah, like what?
I mean, like, I mean, tell her, hey, you know what?
Have you been in that
this
situation
This isn't working
before?
Out. I don't want to marry you anymore, but I'm not going to strangle you to death.
It's pretty effective.
But then again, if he just walked out on her, there wouldn't be a murder in this story, and then Mr. and Mrs. North would not have a murder to solve.
There's
so.
That song, 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover.
Yeah, that's
Slip out
right.
The back, Jack, make a new plan, Stan.
Don't need to be coy, Roy. Just listen to me.
You know.
Right.
So pick one of those.
Hop on the bus, Gus.
You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and set yourself free.
Yeah.
You know, karaoke night usually means you sing and you don't say the words.
Don't you think she's better off saying the words?
Really?
Yeah.
I did that for Carl. You don't want me to sing.
You don't want to hear you sing?
No, we don't.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
That's the first portion of Mr. and Mrs. North with Die Hard from September 8th, 1953. Wasn't that a Bruce Willis movie, Die Hard?
Yeah, it was.
It was. Yeah.
There's a few of them, aren't there? Like several.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, when we come back from the news, we will have more of Mr. and Mrs. North. Then it's The Whistler, which, you know, I have my best friend, Vince Lombardi's two sons are here. We have Mario Lombardi and Dominic Lombardi are here. They were here last night, too. And say hi, guys. Hang on a second. Let's see. There you go. Hi, guys. Say hi.
Hey, how's it going?
So, you know, I'm not sure, was it Dominic or Mario that suggested that instead of playing the Whistler, we should call it the Whisperer because I have laryngitis?
That was totally good. That was my idea.
That was good. That was very good. I think I will whisper it the whole time from now on.
I don't think you're able to stop talking. Laryngitis or no laryngitis, it's not in your genes.
What do you guys think of the studios here?
Really nice. First one I've ever been in.
You've been in this is the first time.
So I say they don't realize how most studios don't look like this. Yeah. This studio is extraordinary.
Equipment, like he has duct tape on it and things like that. There's no duct tape. They don't even allow duct tape on the 18th floor here. It's not allowed, Lisa.
Oh, I didn't know. So I better get rid of money quick.
All right, it's time for the news. Here's Roger Badish.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're back, and we are listening to Mr. and Mrs. North. This was not only a very popular radio show, but it did make a transition to television with these two actors, Richard Denning and Barbara Britton. And she was a cutie patootie, that Barbara Britton. I think there's a picture. We put a picture up of the two of them. And, you know, the show was super popular on television. As I say, it was the inspiration for Heart to Heart. And it was just like this couple that was really not detectives, but they were amateur detectives because they were always solving a crime.
They happened to run into a crime each week.
Yeah. they lived in New York. They were wealthy.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody, you know, somebody was like this guy just strangled his gonna-be wife.
That's called a fiancé.
Yeah.
The gonna be wife?
Soon to be wife.
Right.
All right. Well, let's find out. I think this is actually Bill Johnstone is the killer here. He played the shadow for a while. His very distinct voice. Let's get back now to Mr. and Mrs. North.
Here we are. Golly, I'd almost forgotten how beautiful it was up here.
Oh, I've got to sit down, Pam.
Oh, doesn't Pilot Rock have a lovely view?
Yeah, so do picture postcards. And you can get them in a drugstore.
Oh, you. Complain. I warned you when we planned this weekend that I was going to do all the things I did when I was in college.
Yeah, well, you certainly are. Thank heavens you weren't on the football team.
Oh, come on, you old grouch.
Oh, where now?
Down the road.
Road? Well, how did anyone get a road up here? With parachutes?
Well, it's not very steep on the other side.
Oh. Pam.
Yes?
Pam, dear. No, I won't ask that question.
What question?
Well, why, if there's a road, we didn't drive up instead of climb?
Oh. Here's the road.
And a very good road.
Uh-huh. Jerry, what's that down there in the grass?
Hmm? Where?
Well, there. It looks like a book.
Oh, let's see.
Well, that's what it is.
Yeah, The Psychology of Murder.
Imagine, just imagine, such irresponsibility, such... Oh, where did you say you found it, dear?
Up on Pilot Rock.
Well, I never...
Do you remember who took the book out?
No. No, but we'll find out from the files right now.
I'd better not wait, Bertie. Jerry's outside in the car.
Oh, of course. Oh, and don't forget,
You and Jerry are coming to dinner tomorrow night.
We're looking forward to it.
Fried chicken with Jimmy's gravy.
Wonderful.
Goodbye, Bertie.
Goodbye, dear.
Bye. Well, now, I'm going to find out who... Wait. I remember. Professor Markham. He seemed like such a nice young man. Just goes to show you never can tell about...
Hello?
Professor Markham? This is Miss Twigg at the library, and I'm shocked at you.
Well, what's the matter, Miss Twigg?
You apparently do not recall what you did with The Psychology of Murder by G. Emerson Pierce, which you took out of the library yesterday. Well, it has been found.
Found?
And returned to the library.
Where was it?
Right where you left it, Professor. Up on Pilot Rock.
Oh, I see. Oh, yes. Yes, I did drive up to the rock yesterday in the afternoon for some fresh air. I must have knocked it off the seat of my car without noticing it. I'm sorry, Miss Twigg. I'm terribly sorry.
Well, I suppose we all make mistakes, don't we? Even professors.
Yes, even professors.
Well, I'll forgive you this once.
Well, thank you, Miss Twigg.
And the book is here if you want it.
I'll pick it up this evening. And, Miss Twigg.
Yes?
I'd appreciate it if you didn't mention this to anyone. I wouldn't want to get the reputation for being an absent-minded professor.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. That is all funny, isn't it? Well, don't worry, Professor. This will be our secret. Just ours. Goodbye. Well, now he's probably a nice young man after all.
Afternoon, Miss Twigg.
Hi, Sheriff Conway. Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
I'd like to ask you a couple of questions, Miss Twigg.
Why, certainly, Sheriff. Of course. What about?
Do you know Mrs. Mildred Turner? Her husband runs the Turner Cafe in Clover Avenue.
Why, yes, I know Mrs. Turner.
Was she in the library last night? Any time after 7:30, say.
Last night? No, Sheriff, she wasn't. Why?
She's missing.
Missing?
Her husband says she didn't come home at all last night. He's afraid something's happened to her.
Oh, hi, Sheriff.
Hello, Dan.
Find out anything?
Nothing. Been all over town, everywhere. Even at the library. No one saw her. Mr. Turner go home?
A few minutes ago. But there's a Mr. and Mrs. North waiting for you in your office.
What are they on?
Didn't say.
Well, you better go out and have your dinner, Dan.
Okay.
You folks want to see me?
Sheriff Conway?
Yeah.
We're Mr. and Mrs. North.
We heard over at the hotel that a Mrs. Turner, the wife of the man who owns the Turner Cafe, is missing.
Do you know anything about Mrs. Turner?
Well, nothing that you may not already know, but we thought we'd better tell you anyway.
You see, we had dinner at the Turner Cafe last night, and we overheard Mr. and Mrs. Turner having a pretty heated argument.
What about?
Well, from what we heard, it sounded like Mr. Turner was accusing his wife of meeting some man.
And Mrs. Turner finally went storming out with Turner yelling that he'd kill her.
What time was this?
About 7:30.
Well, I wouldn't take it too seriously. Oh, I'll ask Turner about it, of course. But now that I know about this fight, I figure Mrs. Turner just went off somewhere in a huff. Turner will probably be hearing from her in a day or... Oh, excuse me. Conway speaking. Yes, Phil.
What? Where?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm on my way. Well, looks like I was wrong.
Wrong? About what?
About not taking Mr. Turner's threat seriously. She's dead.
Murdered?
Yeah. Bill Bates found her body lying in the underbrush up on Pilot Rock. She was strangled to death.
Public library. Miss Twigg speaking.
Bertie, this is Pam.
Pamela, dear, I'm just thinking about you. Yes, I was.
Bertie.
I'm just remembering how much you liked my popovers when you used to come to my house. But...
Bertie, please, I've got to talk to you.
Is something wrong, dear?
Have you heard about Mrs. Turner, Bertie?
Mrs. Turner? As a matter of fact, I have, yes. Sheriff Conway came into the library this afternoon and...
Bertie, she's dead. She was murdered.
Murdered? But that's impossible. Why, just yesterday she... Murdered?
Bertie, listen. The book that Jerry and I found and returned to the library.
Yes?
Well, it may be a clue to who murdered Mildred Turner.
What?
Well, Jerry and I aren't sure. We haven't even told Sheriff Conway about the book yet, but...
No, no, dear, you're wrong. Why, it's unthinkable.
Bertie, will you please... Bertie!
Good evening, Miss Twing.
Bertie!
Good evening, Professor.
Bertie!
Pamela, dear, I'll have to call you back.
But I...
Goodbye, dear.
I came to pick up the book, Miss Twing.
Book? Oh, yes, book. Now, let's see. Where did I... Here we are.
Thank you. And again, my apologies.
Oh, that's perfectly all right, Professor. Oh, my goodness, look at the time. 8 o'clock.
Closing time?
Yes.
Well, I won't detain you since I seem to be the only one here. Good night, Miss Twing.
Good night, Professor.
Miss Twing, about the book being lost, it's still our secret, isn't it?
Oh, indeed, yes. Yes, indeed. Oh, my, yes.
Miss Twig. Hi, Professor.
Oh, jeepers, Miss Twig, have you heard about Mrs. Turner?
That's it, dear.
She's been murdered. Honest, she was strangled to death. Strangled.
And they just found her just a little while ago up on Pilot Rock.
Nancy.
She was under some bushes, absolutely dead, with her eyes wide open and her
Nancy.
And Mr. Turner's been arrested and... Oh, isn't that exciting? Jeepers, I better go home and tell Dad and Mom before someone else does. Bye, Miss Twig.
Nancy!
Bye, Professor.
You know, don't you?
No.
The book and Mrs. Turner both found on Pilot Rock. That's why you're so nervous.
I don't know what you...
Give me your keys.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to close up for you. Give them to me.
Oh.
Thank you. Now let's... Don't touch that phone. Let it ring.
She just doesn't answer. Jerry, there's something wrong.
Now, Pam.
I know there is.
Just because she doesn't answer the telephone?
But she answered it a couple of minutes before.
All right. So in a couple of minutes, she closed the library and left.
What time is it?
8:05.
No.
No what, Pam?
No, Bertie hasn't closed the library and left. The library closes at 8, but Bertie never leaves before 8:30.
No, Pam,
True, I worked in that library for 2 years, Jerry, I know. Darling, we've got to get down there and find out what's wrong. Bertie, it's Pam!
Darling, she isn't here.
Bertie!
You can see for yourself that the place is pitch dark.
Come on.
Where are you going?
There's a side door. Hardly anybody knows about it. I want to see if it's unlocked.
And if the front door's locked, then the side door will be locked.
Here.
All right, try it. You'll see for yourself that it's unlocked.
Come on.
Hey, it's dark in here.
All the light switches are over by the main entrance.
Oh, but Pam, what would Bertie Twig be doing sitting around here in the dark?
Jerry, believe me, there's something wrong. Bertie would never have gone off and left that side door unlocked. Why, Bertie is the most... Jerry! Look.
Where?
Over there on the floor.
Holy...
Bertie! Bertie! Oh, Bertie!
I'll get the lights.
Jerry, she's... Jerry.
I heard it.
It came from over there. There's someone back in the staff.
I'm going to take a look. You telephone the sheriff.
I want to go with you.
No, Pam. Telephone the sheriff.
All right, but be careful, darling.
Yeah.
Hello? Sheriff Conway? Sheriff, this is Mrs. North. I'm calling from... Jerry! Jerry!
I'm all right, Pam.
Well, what happened?
Somebody jumped me. A man. Didn't you see him?
No.
You would have if he'd gone out the side door.
He would still be in here.
Unless he got out a window.
There aren't any, not on the first floor, except small ones up above the stack.
Now, let's get some lights turned on.
Here are the switches.
Okay, now let's close the side door and he won't be able to...
Jerry!
What?
Look. Climbing up that bookcase.
He's the one Bertie introduced us to.
Professor Markham.
He's trying to get out that window.
Jerry, the bookcase is tipping over.
Wait, pulling it over. Markham, look out.
It's falling.
Get back, Pam. Come on, Pam.
He's pinned under the bookcase.
And we'll never be able to move it. A steel case like that must weigh a ton. Markham.
Jerry.
There's no hurry about getting him out. He's dead.
Oh.
What was that?
I don't know. It sounded like... Bertie! Oh, Jerry. Darling, she's alive. She's all right.
choking me, and then I heard you, Pamela. Oh, have some dumplings here. Pounding on the door and calling my name. More chicken, Jerry. And then, well, I just don't remember a thing.
You fainted.
Exactly, that's exactly what I did. Potatoes, anyone?
And Markham must have thought you were dead.
Oh, that man, that horrible, horrible, horrible man. Do you know what he was going to do? He told me himself.
What?
Pass it, Jerry the Gravy, dear. That book you found up on Pilot Rock.
What about it?
Well, after he killed me, he was going to take the book and destroy the record of it in my files.
So it could never be traced back to him.
Exactly, dear, exactly. Do have another pop over, Jerry. He was actually going to steal that book. Well, when he told me that, I saw right then and there what kind of a man he was.
Of Mr. and Mrs. North are brought to you through the facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
You know, you don't mess with Mr. and Mrs. North. They always get their man or woman or whatever.
Right.
You know?
I picked up on that.
They may be amateur detectives, but right. They were pretty...
They win in the end.
Darn good at getting the bad guy.
Well, we need
girl.
A little more Mr. and Mrs. North around here.
We do. September 8th, 1953, that was Die Hard, starring Richard Denning and Barbara Britton, and I'm pretty sure that was Bill Johnstone in the cast, the bad guy there. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Okay, Lisa, this is our show. We're here every single Saturday and Sunday night. We begin at 11 p.m., Saturday and Sundays, and we play all your favorite classic radio shows. And you know what? We've had a lot of new listeners texting in, a lot of new listeners.
Yeah, I'm it's glad fun. To hear from the new ones and the old ones. And I want to say hello to our producer, Ashley Byhun, who is filling in tonight for Shantae. So it's always a treat to have you with us.
Yes. Can you talk or no? Do you have laryngitis too?
Her voice does not come through the airwaves.
Margaret just texted in from Bridgeport, and Margaret said, "Poor Carl, he sounds so sad."
Read the rest of it.
Now is the time to hijack the show, Lisa, right.
Are
listen
you having
to,
trouble reading, Carl?
Call it the Listen to Lisa Show, and sometimes Carl.
That's
Carl
right.
Carl should have listened to you.
That's right. I couldn't agree more with Margaret.
What should I have listened to you about?
We should call. We should do a new show called Listen to Lisa. No, listen to Lisa and maybe Carl.
Margaret, hi out there in Bridgeport. How you doing? Yeah, I'm not sad. It's just hard to talk.
I'm not sad at all. Actually,
if anybody
maybe
wants
it's
to
a
send
good
me
thing.
A sympathy card.
Or some lozenges, or as you call them, lozengers.
Lozenges. No, I learned it's lozenge.
Yeah.
If you want to send me a sympathy card, you can do so.
Right.
Here at the radio station.
Or you could just talk less.
Right.
And that would be okay, too.
But I do like our theme songs. And
I'm happy with
you have
mine.
Those handy? You have our theme songs handy? Here's Lisa's theme song.
I aspire to be that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, evil is not always bad. You know?
I know that.
Evil can actually be, like Evil Knievel.
Like Evil Knievel. I was going to say cool. that. He's the Daredevil.
Oh, man. I was a big Evil Knievel fan.
I mean, we
kid.
All watched him on television.
I had the Evil Knievel toy. You know, like
I had that too. We had that too.
And you know what I noticed? And I think this was done on purpose. The Evil Knievel doll itself.
Yes.
He had very thin wires inside the doll because if you did something with it, it would break and then the arm would be like broke. I think that was done because he was always breaking bones. And I think they tried to make it realistic.
Yeah, I don't
you know
what?
And I'll tell
right.
you something. There are guys out there listening right now. There are guys that are my age.
Or gals.
Well, mostly guys had that toy.
I have that toy.
Well, you're a little. You're a little strange.
I am?
I mean, that's not a not a girl toy, Evel Knievel.
I think you're too worried
about
gender.
But anyway, there are guys out there that know exactly what I'm talking about.
And girls.
That Evel Knievel doll his arms and legs used to break really easily.
Girls had Evel Knievel dolls, and I had G.I. Joes and all sorts of good
things. You had G.I. Joes? That'd be like me saying I had Barbies.
That would be okay.
No, it's not.
Okay.
All right, so here is my theme song.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. Too sexy for my shirt. So sexy.
I hope you can see Carl dancing
to
the song.
I want our listeners to know that I did not pick this song for myself. Lisa picked this song for me.
I did. And you know what I think? We should continue this trend. Maybe next week we'll come up with new songs for each other.
That's a good idea.
Let's do it again.
Lisa, I think you just, for the first time in 3 years that you've been on the air,
hit it right on.
Came up with a good idea.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Just one or two every couple of years.
This is a great idea, Lisa.
Thanks, Carl.
See how this just morphed into something fun to do?
I think you're a morph, Carl.
Next week. We're going to pick two more theme songs.
I just said that.
I'll pick one for you.
Yeah, that's how it works.
And you pick one for me.
Yeah, I'm on it.
And then I picked Evel Woman for you.
Okay, I got that. Now we'll move on.
Okay. Did I get one?
Roger?
Yeah, do I get a theme song?
Should we pick one? We'll
do it together.
We'll pick one for you,
I mean, Carl and I will work on that for you, Roger.
I appreciate that.
I know you want to be in it. And we want you to be in it.
I need someone to look over his shoulder.
I'm just the one for the job. You know that.
Yes, I know.
All right, we're on.
That's what we're going to do. We're going to pick.
Roger's so funny. He's like,
songs.
Can I play too?
Can I be part of it? Can I be in the sandbox with you guys?
You can play too, Roger.
I have a shovel and bucket.
I brought some toys.
You can play too.
And I have
Roger.
Candy. Roger has a lot of candy.
He sure does.
He's
and
got
he's
a
been
lot
sharing,
of candy.
So you can
sharing.
Play too.
Thanks, Roger.
You're welcome.
You are the best. All right, when we come back from the break, it's the Whistler Good Mystery from 1947. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN radio on TuneIn. It is exactly midnight. Time for the news. Here's Roger Badish.
Care to dance?
Sure. Man, my voice is getting worse.
What, are you in high school?
Sure. Henry!
Yeah,
coming, mother. I could play Henry Aldridge right now.
Yeah, you'd be great.
Roger, you play the dad.
And okay. Then
I'll be the mother.
Lisa will be the mom.
There you go.
All right.
Okay.
Ready? So do the Henry Aldridge.
Henry Aldridge.
It wasn't kind of.
Oh, sorry.
Hang on. It's more like this. Henry Aldridge.
Oh, my God.
Try that.
That's horrible.
No, I can't.
And I'll do the coming mother.
No, I'm good now. Let's move on.
All right. That just fell right off the ledge. That whole bit just
floors
fell
up.
Right off the edge. Oh, my gosh. All right. So, yeah.
This is hour two.
Hour two.
Okay.
I'm thinking of a song for you, Roger.
Huh?
I think I have a song for you.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm not going to tell you what it is, though. You'll have to listen to it next week.
Well, he'll be here. So that's the good news.
He will be here. And I have another song for Lisa.
Great.
Wait, I thought it was only one per person.
No.
It is.
We're all,
what, each
all three
week?
Of us. Yeah.
Oh, each week. Okay.
Right. Yeah. We're moving forward.
I got to pay attention.
Yes, you really do have to listen.
Yeah.
If you're going to play with us in the sandbox, Roger,
you have to play by our rules.
Play by the rules.
We made the rules.
Otherwise, take your bat and ball and go home. It's Prince Spaghetti Day.
Your
go home.
Your mom's waiting for you.
You got spaghetti waiting for you at home, Roger.
Oh, goody.
Remember back then, you know, when we were kids, our parents would be like, go out and come back around dinner time.
My mom used to have a bell.
Go.
No, we were
doing?
Too far away to hear a bell.
Go out.
I don't know. She had a
outside,
bell, and she'd go to the back
air.
Door, and
remember
she'd
that,
ring
Roger?
The bell.
Yeah, my mom wouldn't even have to tell me. I'd be gone.
I'd be like, okay, what am I going to do now? I have a stick.
When it gets dark, you come home.
And I have a golf ball. See, what should I do with this? A stick and a golf ball.
Oh, I could tell you what to do with this. But I won't.
Oh, God. All right. But remember those days, Roger?
Yes,
you tell your kid. I mean, could you imagine even telling your kid that now?
Like, just be back by dark.
You know, yeah, be back by dark.
By 9 o'clock,
No, I wouldn't tell him to be back. It depends on the age. I mean, if my kids like were if my five, kids were old enough
leave,
to go to the
go,
park,
get
for
out
like
of here
daycare,
for about 12 hours.
Well, but they told you that from day one.
Yeah, but we weren't worried that they were going to get kidnapped or anything.
I was still in my buggy.
Yeah,
and they were like, "Get out of here!"
Yeah, I don't blame them.
You know what they do? They put them in the buggy and then just push it out
push
the back
it
door.
They
just
push keep it down rolling. The driveway,
down the long that driveway. Oh gosh! All right, enough of that. Yes. Now, children, children. We have some classic radio shows to play.
And we have some Crack the Quote. We've got a prize to give away. We've got a desktop indoor weather station to give away this hour.
All right. After the game, we're going to play The Whistler. What is the movie?
The movie is Gone Girl.
Oh, yeah. Ben Affleck.
Good movie.
All right. So what do they win?
They're going to win a desktop indoor weather station.
Oh, really?
Brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating
and
Cooling.
It just proves I don't listen to
I know.
Lisa.
I know.
I don't know why. I can't do two things at once.
I don't think you could do one thing at once.
there's probably a way to cure that. Mm. I could probably take some kind of class.
Prevagen or something?
Some Prevagen would help. Mm. Yeah. I'm getting at an age where I need Prevagen.
I've noticed that.
You know? All right, so the number to call, 312-981-7200. What caller do you
caller
want?
Caller 5.
5. Call now. We'll play the game right after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Paul on the line. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Lisa.
How are you?
I am good.
So glad you called in. We're going to play a little Crack the Quote. The movie is Gone Girl. Yes, you may play too, Roger. You're in the sandbox with us tonight.
Come on, you can play.
Here we go. You ready?
Yes.
Quote number one, so begins the era of awesomeness. Number two, you're such a waste of potential awesomeness. Number three, I'm the guy to save you from all this awesomeness.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome is in the title.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome if I could get the
I know, right?
Answer.
That would be awesome. What do you think? Well, you win either way, so just throw one out there.
I think number one.
Number one. So begins the era of awesomeness. Roger, what do you think?
I'll go number two.
Number two, you're such
it's
a waste.
Definitely
of potential
not two.
Awesomeness.
Definitely not two.
Okay, Carl.
It's one.
You so begins the era
I'm
of awesomeness.
I'm going with Paul.
Okay, Ashley, let's play it.
I'm the guy to save you from all this awesomeness.
All right, so it was number three. We had a one and a two, but it was number three. It doesn't matter. It's all in fun.
I stink at this game.
I didn't say it. But you know what? Paul, you're the winner. You have won the desktop indoor weather station. It is the highly coveted prize here in WGN. It is brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. You can give them a call at 855-955-HVAC. Thank you for calling, Paul, and playing the game with us.
Thank you.
Nice to talk
to
you.
Thanks, Paul. All right, so we are ready to play our episode of The Whistler. It's a great series, Lisa, The Whistler. It was on the air a long, long time. Came to radio in 1942 and lasted all the way to 1955, like 700 episodes. Yeah, that's a lot of, lot of episodes. And most of them exist. I have most of them. And this was all about a guy named, you know, called The Whistler, and he whistled at the beginning of the show, kind of an eerie whistle. And then he had, he really knew what was going on. He knew if you were the killer, and, you know, he kind of taunted you. And it was a good mystery series. And there was always a twist at the end.
Right.
Always a twist on the end of The Whistler. And this came out of L.A., had all of L.A.'s supporting characters, Jack Webb, Gerald Moore, Elliot Lewis, William Conrad. We have an episode now called The Blank Wall, and Bill Forman stars as The Whistler with Charles Seal in the lead. The Blank Wall from March 31st, 1947, part one now of The Whistler.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I
and the Whistler. And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. Rated by independent research, the most popular West Coast program in radio history. In gasoline, you know, it takes extra quality to go farther. And Signal is the famous Go Farther gasoline. So look for the Signal circle sign in yellow and black that identifies Signal service stations from Canada to Mexico. And now the Whistler's strange story. The Blank Wall.
It was 5 o'clock, and the crowd in the locker room had slipped into the usual routine of easy chatter about wives and food and the thousand things that happen every day in a bank as busy as the Crane National. On one side, the men on the cleanup crew were getting into striped overalls with a night's work ahead of them. On the other, the guards and messengers were exchanging official navy blue bank uniforms for street clothes. To Walter Mason, though, it was a day of days. He didn't say much as he stood in front of the locker at the end of the row, half hoping the crowd would forget it and let him go his way in peace, yet wanting at the same time to stand up on a bench in the center of the room and shout it at the top of his lungs. As it turned out, however, he didn't have to make a decision. Charlie Bryson, another messenger, made it for him.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, sir. Wait a minute.
Hey, what's the matter, Charlie?
I just happened to think. Excuse me, Joe.
All right.
Quiet, everybody. Hold it a minute, will you? I almost forgot. This is Walter's big night.
Oh, Charlie, for the love of
Mike. Don't be bashful, Walt.
They don't care about
that. Not much they don't. Want to be nice to Walt from now on, fellas? He's liable to be the boss one of these days. I want you to know we think it's great, Walt.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks,
fellas, all of you. Out at the Crane place on Long Island.
Oh, soup and fish, huh?
Oh, yes.
You know, they say there are two sure roads to success. One of them is to be smart. The other is to marry the boss's daughter.
Yeah, but this isn't just...
Almost. Quite... We're going to keep our eye on you, Waller. 25 years as a messenger, isn't it?
Well, not quite.
And I'll bet they give you a great big shiny desk less than a month after your daughter marries young Crane.
You know, Walt, it's hard to believe Mrs. Crane will take this land down.
Yeah, what do you mean?
No doubt.
Oh, you know, Donald's picture in the paper with his society gal and that one. Naturally, Mama expected him to marry one of them.
Yes, but Donald had different ideas.
Oh, I know that. Only in a pinch, I still bet Mama tells young Crane what to do.
Wait now, you've got the kid all wrong. He's...
You know him very well, Walter.
Sure, he's clerking right here at the bank, isn't he? Working himself up from the bottom just like his father. What's wrong with that?
Well, Donald Crane isn't exactly working himself up.
Now, wait a minute. My daughter Kathy is going to marry Donald Crane. I'm happy about it, naturally. But not because he's part of that Long Island crowd. I'm happy because both Kathy and I think he's as fine a man as his father was. They don't come any better than that. That's all. So long, fellas.
Walt.
Yeah, Charlie.
Good luck tonight.
Thanks. You know, Charlie, this is going to be the greatest moment in my life.
And you meant it, Walter. It's the most wonderful thing that ever happened. A party at the Crane home on Long Island, announcing Kathy's engagement to the son of Alfred Crane. And that's the missing part of the picture, Walter. It's 5 years now since Mr. Crane died. And you meant it when you told them he was the finest man you ever knew. That's why everything has to be perfect. Right down to the carnation in the lapel of your rented dinner jacket. And that's why, even though it costs $6, you ride out there in a taxi instead of the pre-war coupe in the garage at home. Yes, Walter, everything has to be right. Just right.
Yes, sir?
My name is Mason.
I beg your pardon?
I said, my name is Mason. I'm Miss Mason's father. Would you mind taking my hat and coat?
Oh, of
course. Let me help you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, sir. It was quite a shock. I thought I recognized you.
It's nothing. It happens all the time.
I'll tell Mrs. Crane you're here.
Thank you.
That was strange, wasn't it, Walter? Something in the way the butler looked at you, the puzzled look in his eyes as he took your hat and coat, walked slowly out of the reception hall. And you can't put your finger on it. All you know is that there's an unsettled, nervous feeling inside you, that somehow the man has thrown you a little off balance. You try and forget it later in the ballroom. Yes. This is something to celebrate, isn't it, Walter? And Kathy is in seventh heaven.
You're not paying much attention to your partner. What's the matter, Dad?
Oh, it's nothing, Kathy.
There's nothing to be afraid of, darling.
What do you mean?
Forget you work at the bank, Daddy. These people are really very nice.
Oh, it's not that.
You're worried about something. I can always tell.
Why, it's just that I don't think it's right for you to go waltzing off with an old fogey like me while Don stands around with his hands in his pockets.
Do you mind, Mr. Mason?
Huh? Oh, Donald.
Oh, speak of the devil.
I'm just like my father. Can't stand competition.
You see, Kathy?
I'm only kidding. Matter of fact, Mother'd like to talk to you, Mr. Mason.
Oh, of course.
And it's about time you two got to know each other. You know, I want you to be as close to her as you were to Dad.
I hope so, Donald. Where is she?
In the library. Probably tapping her foot. And by the way, whatever she says, don't take it too seriously.
Please sit down, Mr. Mason.
Thank you, Mrs. Crane.
And Chalk.
Yes, ma'am.
Would you bring us some coffee, please?
Of course, ma'am.
I want you to know, Mr. Mason, how much I admire your daughter. She's a charming girl.
I'm very proud of Kathy.
You have a right to be. Donald worships her, of course.
I'm sure they'll be very happy.
I don't know quite how to say this, Mr. Mason. I'm afraid I'll have to put it a little bluntly.
What's that, Mrs. Crane?
I'm not entirely convinced it's going to work out. Donald and I have discussed it many times, but, of course, he's as stubborn as his father.
What are you talking about?
It's hard to reason with young people at a time like this. I opposed the marriage from the very first, but Donald is going ahead in spite of me.
But I don't know what
you... Please, let me finish. I was forced to look at this thing rather coldly. I'd prefer to stop it now rather than see Donald do something he'd regret.
But wait, Mrs. Crane.
Mr. Mason... There's no point in disguising facts. You must know Donald's decision came as a shock to me. When I realized that thing was serious, I took it upon myself to investigate your background quite thoroughly.
You what?
I hired a private investigator. He's been working for 2 weeks.
And he found out what?
Nothing. Otherwise, I never would have gone through with this announcement party tonight. However, until the wedding, it's not too late. And I think it's only fair to warn you that there are still some questions unanswered. My investigator seems to have run into a blank wall. He could find nothing of your whereabouts or occupation prior to the time you came to work for my husband in 1922.
And what's all this got to do with Kathy and Donald?
Everything. People in my position of responsibility... Can't be too careful, Mr. Mason.
Oh, but they can, Mrs. Crane. I wish your husband were alive. I wish he could have sat in that chair over there and listened to you talk about
please,
the...
Please, Mr.
What
Mason.
What right have you to investigate me? What difference does it make where I was in 1922 or 1916 or any other time for that matter? You've taken a great deal upon yourself, Mrs. Crane. And if you want my frank opinion, I think your husband would have been shocked at your methods.
Mr. Mason. Sorry, Sharp.
I didn't mean to intrude, ma'am, but you're wanted on the telephone.
Thank you, Sharp. Pour Mr. Mason a cup of coffee. You will excuse me, Mr. Mason?
Certainly.
Why didn't you tell her the truth, Billy? Billy. Billy Ford, Sing Sing, 1916 to 22.
Charge manslaughter, and don't tell me I'm wrong. I was there. Sharp. Roy Sharp. It hit me between the eyes when you walked in tonight, but I wasn't sure until a minute ago. There's a reason for the blank wall the gumshoe ran into, isn't there?
I didn't try to fool anybody. I told Mr. Crane he helped me.
He's dead. And I'm afraid the old lady hasn't got his understanding heart. You know, Billy, as of 2 hours ago, I started believing in miracles again.
What do you mean?
I'm in a spot. I need $10,000 the worst way.
Oh, wait a minute, Roy.
You're going to get it for me.
$10,000? I can't
get... But you can. By tomorrow night at 10, Crescent Bar on 58 and 3rd. I'll be there.
But wait a minute.
Sharp!
Coming, ma'am.
Sharp! Wait a minute, Sharp!
I can't. The old lady's calling. But just remember to meet me tomorrow night, Billy, or some of those questions of hers won't be unanswered any longer.
With the prologue of The Blank Wall, the Signal Oil Company brings you another strange story by The Whistler.
All right, there's the first portion of The Whistler. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
My Pillow.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
44 million.
That's a lot.
I know. And that's how many pillows MyPillow has sold over the last 13 years. Are they really that good?
Mm-hmm.
Well, have you tried one yet, Carl?
Yes, I have two.
All right.
I use one, but I don't use the other one.
All right. Well, one is good. MyPillow has built a business on the foundation of helping people sleep better.
Still unused.
All while making each pillow right here in the USA. So ditch that flat, worn-out pillow you've been sleeping on for years. Try a MyPillow.
What if I like a flat, worn-out pillow?
Join the millions of people who are getting the best sleep of their lives. Go to MyPillow.com.
My head is flat.
Or call 800-299-9579. Use promo code WGN. So buy a one MyPillow premium. You'll get one MyPillow premium free. It's a buy one, get one. And on top of a 10-year warranty, MyPillow is so confident you'll love your new pillow, they'll give you a 60-day money-back guarantee. So sleep on it. And if you don't believe it's the absolute best, return it for a full refund. Call 800-299-9579 or log on to MyPillow.com. Use promo code WGN for the buy one premium, get one free offer.
You know, just because something becomes flat and worn out,
yes,
you don't necessarily throw it out.
Well, I mean, if it were a pillow, I certainly would.
Well, I guess so.
Okay.
All right. We are listening to The Whistler, and this is a good show. I like this whole, got this whole concept going on.
You're going to quit the babble and get on to the radio show?
This guy is going to try to blackmail him. Yeah.
All right.
$10,000.
Ooh.
So let's see what happens.
All
Here's
right.
the conclusion to The Whistler.
And now, back to The Whistler. After 25 years, the blank wall that separated Billy Ford, ex-convict, from Walter Mason, respectable citizen, has given way. It came at a terrible moment, didn't it, Walter? And you know that one word from Sharp will put an end to the marriage of your daughter, Kathy, and Donald Crane. You make an excuse to Mrs. Crane, leave the party early, arrive home before midnight, and spend 6 hours sitting in an easy chair in the living room thinking. The morning light is gray on the windows when you rise wearily, start to put on your working clothes. There's no other way, is there, Walter? Kathy's happiness comes first now. Sharp must have his money.
Well, good morning, Walter.
Not so good, Mr. Cromwell. I'm not feeling very well.
Too much party last night?
I'm not sure, but I was wondering, Mr. Cromwell, if I felt like going home this afternoon, would it
be... Certainly, Walter, I understand. You should have phoned this morning. It wasn't necessary to come in.
Well, I thought I'd be all right. Thanks, Mr. Cromwell.
Oh,
Your savings account? Oh, sure. I'll give you the balance in a minute. Let's see. Melford, Manning, Mason. Now, here we are. You're a rich man, Walter. You've got exactly $3,206.18.
$3,200.
Oh, thanks, Jim. Thanks a lot. Charlie, I don't know how to ask you this exactly.
What is it, Walt? You in some kind of trouble?
Charlie, how much have you got in the bank?
Huh? My savings?
Yes, I know it isn't a nice thing to ask.
Skip it. It's no secret, but it's no fortune either. About 2,000 bucks.
2,000. And I know I couldn't ask you for all of it.
What? I should say you couldn't. The old lady'd wring my neck.
How much could you let me have, Charlie? You know I'd pay it back.
Huh? Oh, sure. Gosh, Walter, you're my best friend. I'd do anything for you. Only this
it's
money...
It's all right. Forget it, huh?
But, Walt, there must be something I can
no,
do.
No, there isn't, Charlie. Just don't mention this to anyone. Please don't. Well, what do you think?
I don't know. The car shows care, all right.
I bought it from the original owner, and the motor's had a complete overhaul.
Yeah, I know. Well, I guess it's worth five bills.
Only $500 for a car?
The war's over, pal. Take it or leave it.
Selling your stamps. Oh, but, Mr. Mason, you've spent years...
I know you're the one person who'll give me a fair price.
Mr. Mason, a fair price? How can I put a price on anything like your collection?
That's very nice of you, Arnold, but it's been taking up too much of my time lately, and I've decided to quit.
Oh, I cannot believe that. You'll drop out of the society completely. Oh, no. What has happened? 25 years is a long time to sort...
Please, Arnold, I've made up my mind. How much? What is the collection worth?
If I may suggest, Mr. Mason, I would prefer to give you the money in the form of a loan. That way, I could keep your stamps here for a while, altogether, in case you change your mind.
You're a very unusual man, Arnold.
Oh, it's business, Mr. Mason, business. I just don't want to lose a good customer.
I know better than that. All right, Mr. Businessman. How much of a loan can you make on it?
$1,000? Would that help?
A thousand? For a little collection like... Arnold, it's a tragedy how few of us ever know our real friends.
You add it up, Walter, after leaving Arnold's tiny shop. Add up every cent you were able to raise. It comes to a little over 6,000. Not what Sharp asked for, but he'll have to agree. Have to be satisfied because there's no one else you can turn to. That night at 10 o'clock, you enter the Crescent Bar. He's already there waiting, an empty cocktail glass on the table in front of him.
Don't tell her.
Well, hello, Billy.
Please, Sharp.
All right. Sit down, Walter. You're just in time to pay for the drinks. What do you have?
I don't care for anything.
Well, it's all right, too. But let's get to it. You bring the money with you?
I want to talk to you about it first.
No use talking about it. I just want to see it.
I can only raise $6,200.
I asked for 10. I thought I made it clear.
It's the best I can do, Sharp. You don't know how much trouble it was.
I don't care about that. I told you it had to be 10,000. I meant it. I have my troubles, too, Billy.
Oh, there's nothing more I can do.
Well, that's where you're wrong.
I don't understand.
Maybe I shouldn't make it so easy for you. But we can get that money another way.
If you're suggesting...
I'm not
that...
suggesting anything, Billy. I'm telling you what you're going to do. I've looked into your job at the bank.
What about my job?
It includes some interesting responsibilities for an ex-con.
The people I work for have faith in me, if that's what you mean.
I'm surprised the bonding company slipped up so badly.
I'm not covered by a bond.
Oh?
Alfred Crane was alive when I got out. He was decent enough to give me a chance.
Bless him, Billy, bless him. It gives you another chance now.
I don't think so.
I do. I understand you'll be carrying a batch of negotiable securities tomorrow morning.
What of it?
You're taking them to the Lincoln Investment Company at 10:30, right?
I know what you're thinking, Roy. It's no go. I'd rather they found out about me.
You're bluffing, friend. That kid of yours means more to you than anything in the world.
You've got it all figured out, haven't you?
I've got you figured out. That's why I'm so sure you'll cooperate tomorrow when you take that morning stroll.
It doesn't seem real, does it, Walter? You wander home in a daze, and there's another sleepless night, while you tell yourself over and over that this thing can't be happening after all these years of peace. The next morning you arrive late at the bank, still dazed, shaky, wondering what will happen when you set out for the investment company, and Roy Sharp walks up to you on the street. But you don't have to wonder long, Walter. Mr. Cromwell settles it all as you come in.
Walter, we didn't expect you.
Huh? Oh, sure, Mr. Cromwell, I'm feeling better.
Charlie Bryson figured you needed a little rest. He took over for you.
Took over?
Well, those securities for Lincoln Investment. He's going to deliver them.
What? Oh, but he doesn't have to do that. I'm perfectly able, Mr. Cromwell. I'll go tell Charlie.
And suddenly you realize, Walter, how impossible the whole situation is. The phony holdup, the inevitable questions, and then Sharp coming back to you with another proposition, and another. You're certain of one thing. If Sharp were to see your friend Charlie carrying that satchel in your place, he'd never dare go through with a robbery. Instead, he'd go straight to Mrs. Crane with the whole story. And that doesn't matter anymore, does it, Walter? Because you've made a decision, an important one.
Hello, Kathy.
Dad, what are you doing home?
I have something to tell you, dear, and there isn't much time. Sit down here, right next to me.
What is it, Dad? What's happened?
Kathy, you remember that young man I used to tell you about, Billy Ford?
The one who went to prison?
That's right. He was a nice kid, Kathy. Had some tough breaks, got into trouble, did 5 years in Sing Sing.
I remember, but... Dad. You thought a lot of him. He died a long time ago, didn't he?
I thought he did.
What do you mean?
Kathy, I'm Billy Ford.
I used to wonder about that. Why are you telling me?
Because I'm afraid everyone's going to know.
Who is it, Dad?
Mrs. Crane's butler, Roy Sharp.
Oh, I see.
Where are you going?
Dad, believe me, this doesn't make any difference between us, but I want to be honest with Don now, while he has a chance to change his mind.
I'm sorry, Kathy.
Please, darling. It's all right.
I'll go with you.
No. No, I'd rather face them alone.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. Meantime, here's a thought for you drivers to consider. If you had to wear heavy winter clothes right on through spring, you wouldn't feel very peppy, would you? Well, that's just how your car feels about wearing tired old winter motor oil and gear lube now that spring's here. Yes, if you want to put spring into your driving, it's high time you were treating your car to a spring changeover at your Signal service station. First step is a motor drain and a refill with Signal Premium Motor Oil, the new type lubricant that guarantees you a sweeter running motor by keeping motors 6 times cleaner and reducing cylinder wear 1/3. Next step is fresh Signal gear lube for transmission and differential, and a Signal double-check lubrication for the chassis. And at the same time, your Signal dealer will be glad to check those other points that need attention every 5 or 10,000 miles, such as air cleaner, oil filter, or front wheel bearings. Man, a car just can't help feeling peppier after a spring tonic like this. So give your car a break. See your neighborhood Signal dealer this week for a Signal spring changeover. And now, back to the Whistler.
Mm-hmm. she's gone now, Walter. And you sit alone in the living room, exhausted, numb, filled with a black kind of despair that blots out everything else. Yes, Kathy's gone to tell the man she loves. Her father was a criminal, an ex-convict. There was no other way. The terrible coincidence that placed you and Roy Sharp at the same party ended all hope. Yes, at that moment, the blank wall was breached, and Billy Ford and Walter Mason became one and the same man. You find yourself staring at the black butt of your .38 revolver lying on the living room table. The gun you would have carried this morning if Charlie Bryson hadn't taken your place. At one point, you start to reach for it and decide that's never the answer. You aren't conscious of time, but it's past noon when you decide it wasn't fair to let Kathy face them alone. And an hour later, you walk into the library of the Crane home on Long Island. As you expected, Mrs. Crane is terribly upset.
So, Donald, I suspected that man from the first.
Now, wait a minute, Mother.
Really, Mrs. Crane, it won't do any good to
me. Please, Catherine, you don't understand. They'll pounce on this like a flock of vultures. The papers, the tabloids, everyone.
Just a minute. Maybe I
Dad.
Can... I'm sorry, Kathy. It wasn't fair of me to...
Wait a minute, Dad.
What's the matter?
Donald, show him the paper.
Sure. Here you are, Mr. Mason.
Attempted robbery. Broad daylight.
It's the butler here, Dad. He was killed this morning in a gunfight on Broad Street.
He tried to rob one of the messengers from the bank.
Sharp. Killed. Gunfight.
Wait a minute. Charlie Bryson. What about Charlie?
Charlie?
The messenger. He was the one who...
I'll get it.
Roy Sharp. Then he didn't...
No, Mr. Mason. He didn't.
You...
Yes. You know. She told me.
And your mother?
Oh.
All she knows is...
It's for you,
what she
Mr.
reads in the
Mason.
Papers.
Charlie, somebody.
Charlie? Oh, thanks. Yes, Charlie. Are you all right?
All right. I'm a hero. Reward money and everything. I couldn't wait to call you, Walt.
Oh?
About that money. If you still need it, brother, I've got it.
No, Charlie. Thanks, but everything's all right now.
Whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Monday at 9. Brought to you by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil, and fine quality automotive accessories. Signal has asked me to remind you, to get the most driving pleasure, drive at sensible speeds, be courteous, and obey traffic regulations. It may save a life, possibly your own. Featured in tonight's story were Charles Seal and Jack Petruzzi. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen with music by Wilbur Hatch and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is Marvin Miller speaking for the Signal Oil Company. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Oh, there's a good episode of The Whistler with the blank wall, March 31st, 1947. Bill Forman as The Whistler there. And then we had Jack Petruzzi and Charles Seal as the stars. Marvin Miller, remember the show? You might not because it was a little bit before our time. The Millionaire. It was called The Millionaire.
I've heard of it.
He was the lead on that.
I knew about it, but I didn't see it.
He was the guy handing out the $1 million every week. That's a show that could come back now.
I agree.
Very interesting
concept.
There's
such a resurgence of game shows. I was watching...
Well, this wasn't a game show. It was a drama.
Oh.
He would give someone $1 million at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And then we'd see what happened to their life. It was a drama.
I guess I didn't see it.
Yeah. No, it was before our time. But, it's a concept that could work now, you know, in a drama series. A lot of these shows... that were on the radio and early TV could be done now. I've always thought that yours truly, Johnny Dollar, would work now in a TV series.
Well, get on it.
All right, I will. Let's take a break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. What do we have next week, Lisa?
Well, Saturday night at 11, we have Our Miss Brooks, The Chase, and The Cavalcade of America.